It's 9 o'clock on a Thursday night, and it is time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use, and I do suggest you have a pencil and paper handy so that you can take notes. There might be something you want to write down here. Let's start off with announcements. The California Native Plant Society Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration this Saturday, February 23rd, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. Lots of wonderful rain recently. We will be moving into old-growth broom-pulling territory this Saturday. It should be excellent soil conditions with moist habitat. We should also hear tree frogs and maybe see newts and salamanders. Hope to see you all there. The Pacific chorus frog, also known as the Pacific tree frog, is perhaps the most abundant amphibian on the west coast of North America. The geographic range of these beautiful little green frogs extends from British Columbia down to Baja California and from the Pacific Ocean to Nevada and Montana. Within this huge area, Pacific chorus frogs can be heard from sea level to over 10,000 feet in habitats that include deserts and redwood forests, and they make a lot of noise. To get to Quail Hollow, go up Graham Hill Road from Santa Cruz as you come down into Felton, turn right at the first light and head up East Ziani Road a couple of miles, turn left on Quail Hollow. The park entrance is a half a mile up on the right, and they'll meet in the gravel parking lot on the left-hand side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine, and it's going to be shiny this Saturday. But if it does get unpleasant, they'll call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring gloves and that water. For more information, contact their program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 462-4041. Or email her at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at packbell.net. Or visit their website at www.cruisecnps.org. And do turn out this Saturday, 10 a.m. at Quail Hollow Park for that restoration. And Snapshot Day cometh. Yes, we are so excited to be gearing up the 14th annual Central Coast Regional Snapshot Day event. Mark your calendars for Saturday, May 4th from 9 to 1, and I might tell you Uncle Dennis has really had a lot of fun on Snapshot Day. In partnership with the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary and hundreds of community volunteers, we will systematically sample stream water along 300 miles of coastline. At CWC, we're organizing teams of volunteers to monitor sites across Santa Cruz and San Mateo counties. The Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary will organize teams for Monterey and San Luis Obispo counties. We'll be collecting valuable water quality data such as pH, dissolved oxygen, electrical conductivity, and transparency. We'll also collect water samples for laboratory analysis of bacteria indicators and nutrients like nitrate and orthophosphate. Learn more about why each of these indicators are important to watershed health and be a part of this growing movement. Get some friends and family members and make it a fun day of caring for your environment on Saturday, May 4th. Trainings. Please plan to attend at least one training on the following dates. Santa Cruz, Saturday, April 27th, 10 to noon or 1 to 3 at the Santa Cruz Yacht Harbor Public Meeting Room, 365 Lake Avenue, Suite A. Or San Mateo, April 29th, 6 to 8 p.m. at the San Gregorio General Store, Highway 84 and Stage Road. In Monterey on Sunday, April 28th, from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at the REI Store on General Stillwell Drive in Monterey. And in San Luis Obispo County, on Tuesday, April 30th, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Coastal Discovery Center, Hearst State Beach, San Simeon, California. For more information or to get involved, contact Debbie at the Coastal Watershed Council. Her number, 831-464-9200. That's 831-464-9200. Or send email to djchirco@coastal-watershed.org. Once again, that's djchirco@coastal-watershed.org. And they're really great folks. and thousands attended the climate rally in Washington, D.C. to call on Obama to reject the Keystone Pipeline. And this reporting by Valerie Volkovici, editing by Ross Krenzi and Mohammed Zargam of World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Thousands of protesters gathered on the Washington's National Mall last Sunday to call on President Barack Obama to reject the controversial Keystone XL pipeline proposal and honor his inaugural pledge to act on climate change. Organizers of the Forward on Climate event estimated that 35,000 people from 30 states turned out in cold, blustery conditions for what they said was the biggest climate rally in U.S. history. However, police did not verify the crowd size. Protesters also marched around the nearby White House chanting, "Keystone Pipeline, shut it down." Among the celebrities on hand were actresses Rosario Dawson and Evangeline Lilly, and hedge fund manager and environmentalist Tom Steyer. The event came days after a bipartisan group of U.S. senators made the latest call for Obama to approve the $5.3 billion pipeline, seen by many as an engine for job growth and another step toward energy independence. A new poll by Harris Interactive showed 69% of respondents said they support construction of the pipeline, with only 17% saying they opposed it. One of Sunday's main organizers, climate activist Bill McKibben, said that approving the pipeline, which would transport crude oil from the oil tar sands of northern Alberta to refineries and ports in Texas, would be akin to lighting a carbon bomb that could cause irreparable harm to the climate. For 25 years, our government has basically ignored the climate crisis. Now people in large numbers are finally demanding they get to work, said McKibben, founder of the environmental group 350.org. Other major organizing groups on Sunday include the Sierra Club, which broke a 100-year nonviolent demonstration pledge and actually had 40-some people arrested, and the Hip Hop Caucus. The proposed Trans-Canada Corp project had been pending for 4.5 years. A revised route through Nebraska, which would avoid crossing sensitive ecological zones and aquifers, was approved by that state's governor last month. Backers of Keystone, which would transport 830,000 barrels of oil per day, said it would provide thousands of jobs in the United States and increase North American energy security. Environmentalists oppose the pipeline because the oil sands extraction process is carbon intensive and say the oil extracted is dirtier than crude oil. And that's true. It's twice as dirty. Van Jones, Obama's former green jobs advisor, said if the president approved the pipeline just weeks after pledging to act on climate change, it would overshadow other actions Obama takes to reduce pollution. There is nothing else you can do if you let that pipeline go through. It doesn't matter what you do on smog rules and automobile rules. You've already given the whole game away, said Jones, who is president of Rebuild the Dream, a non-government organization. Democratic Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island, the lone member of Congress to speak at the rally, told Reuters Obama risked creating a credibility gap if he approved the pipeline. He would have to roll out a very complete and very strong package to offset something that on his own is described by government scientists as a game over on climate, he said. Still, some of Obama's core constituents favor the pipeline, including labor union AFL-CIO's building and construction unit, which sees the potential for job creation for its members and certain Democratic lawmakers. In January, 9 Democratic senators joined 44 Republicans in urging the president to approve Keystone XL. Uncle Dennis says no, 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 no pipelines for the tar sands oil. And going to Antarctic waters, Sea Shepherd protesters clash with Japanese whalers and call for naval intervention in this story by Rob Taylor, with editing by Robert Bursell of World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Anti-whaling activist Sea Shepherd Conservation Society called on Wednesday for Australia to send a naval vessel to the Southern Ocean after a confrontation in which they said a Japanese whaling ship collided with two of their protest vessels, damaging their flagship. The Nishin Maru has rammed the Steve Irwin and the Rob Parker. Both vessels continue to hold their positions, said Paul Watson, founder of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, which runs the protest boats. Watson also accused Japanese Coast Guard personnel of throwing concussion grenades at their protest ships during a confrontation in the frigid waters near Antarctica, and said the Bob Barker was taking on water in its engine room. Australia said it was confirming the report of the incident. Neither the Japanese government nor its whaling authority immediately responded to Sea Shepherd's account of the clash. The Sea Shepherd group has clashed with the Japanese fleet for 9 whaling seasons in the southern hemisphere this summer and has lost one of its ships, the high-speed trimaran 80 Gill, which sank after a collision with the whaler Nishin Maru in January of 2010. In the latest incident, the activists have been attempting to prevent an 8,000-ton Japanese factory ship from refueling from a tanker when the collision occurred, Sea Shepherd director Bob Brown told journalists in the Australian city of Melbourne. Brown, a former Australian Greens Party leader before quitting politics, said the two Sea Shepherd ships had been repeatedly rammed and called on Australia's government to dispatch a naval ship to the area to calm the tension. It is illegal to be ramming ships in any seas anywhere on the planet. It is illegal for a tanker to be carrying heavy fuel oil into Antarctic waters under international law, Brown said. Australia sent an armed customs patrol ship into the Southern Ocean in 2008 to gather evidence of Japanese whaling methods for a legal challenge. Australia has filed a complaint against Japan in the World Court in The Hague to stop Southern Ocean scientific whaling. A decision in that case could come this year. The government condemns the so-called scientific whaling in all waters, and we urge everyone in the ocean to observe safety at sea, Australia's Environment Minister Tony Burke said in a statement. Japan introduced scientific whaling to skirt a commercial whaling ban under a 1986 whaling moratorium. Japan argues it has the right to monitor whales' impacts on its fishing industry. And a U.S. appeals court in December issued an injunction ordering Sea Shepherd and Paul Watson not to physically attack or endanger the 5-ship Japanese whaling fleet. If you want more information, go to www.seashepherd.org for more information. And Earth First and Appalachia Resist blockade a fracking wastewater facility. Following the annual Winter Earth First Organizers Conference in Rendezvous, the Green Hunter Fracking Waste Storage Facility in New Matamoras, Ohio, has been shut down and blockaded. There have been 10 confirmed arrests with monopods preventing operations at the facility. In an unprecedented show of unity against the extraction industry, members of Appalachia Resist, Tar Sands Blockade, Radical Action for Mountain People's Survival, or RAMPS, Keystone Blockade, a coalition of indigenous leaders including representatives from No Line 9 and UNIS.N Camp, Great Plains Tar Sands Resistance, and Earth First chapters from across the country have gathered in southern Ohio to blockade and shut down Green Hunter Fracking Waste Water Storage Facility. This is the latest in an ongoing and escalating campaign of resistance to the dangerous and exploitive resource extraction industry that is threatening the existence and survival of the Earth and all its inhabitants. Nate Ebert, a 33-year-old Athens County resident and member of Appalachia Resist, ascended a 30-foot-tall monopod anchored to a truck that was dropping off toxic frack waste at the facility, preventing all trucks carrying frack waste from entering the site. Two banners have also been hung from two different tanks holding frack waste. The front gate of the facility was locked down by activists. All gates are being blocked by activists, and all work at the facility was halted. Our governor, legislature, and regulatory agencies have all failed in their obligation to protect Ohioans from the predatory gas industry, said Ebert. Green Hunter wants to use our water sources as dumping grounds for their toxic radioactive waste. We are here to send a message to the people of Ohio and Appalachia. We will not sit idly by and watch our homes be turned into a sacrifice zone. No toxic waste dumping, no fracking, no pipelines, no compromise. If you want more information and up-to-date information, go to www.appalachiaresist.wordpress.com. That's appalachiaresist at .wordpress.com. And a tree sit in banner action in Pennsylvania to stop the pipeline. Following a banner drop on I-84, Orange County, New York resident Gifford Pinchot has erected a tree stand to prevent the designated clear-cutting required for the construction of the Tennessee Gas Pipeline upgrade between Foster Hill and Cumming Hills Roads in rural eastern Pennsylvania. The northeast upgrade would transport additional Marcellus shale gas west to east from hydraulically fractured wells along Pennsylvania's northern tier. Hydrofracking, or fracking, has become a controversial method for extracting natural gas due to its reputation for contaminating local waterways, dangerously disposing of frack waste, and other social, economic, and environmental concerns. Today marked the first day of a full-time tree sit to stop the highly controversial Tennessee gas pipeline. A very good friend, Gifford, ascended 45 feet feet on the platform to show his dedication. With safety being our number one concern, with something of this magnitude, I was there as direct support to make sure Gifford's well-being was respected and to provide emotional support. Sometime after 8 a.m., we were met by a two-man crew of survey people who then called their higher-ups, and an hour or so later, a nice gentleman named Mike was on the scene. We were very forthcoming with our intentions to keep everyone safe and to provide answers to any pressing questions he had. He informed us that at that time he would be contacting the local authorities, which was something to be expected. Two more hours went by, sitting by the fire, before we encountered a police officer. We made it clear to him that our comrade would not be coming down from his perch and why we were actually there. The officer and his partner instructed us to gather our things and be escorted out of the woods to be picked up by someone. The two officers led us through the clear-cut section of the forest and led us to I-84, where we were put in handcuffs and taken to the station for a full booking process, including fingerprinting and picture-taking. In reality, the officer was only accusing us of trespass, informing us that if we were seen on the property again, our charges would be upgraded to a misdemeanor, which amounts to basically a speeding ticket. During our booking, two security members related with the industry were present, and we could hear them talking negatively about us and Gifford, who was, and still, is in the tree. They wanted to send a message. What they wanted was for myself and the other individual working direct support to be scared. They did the direct opposite. My experiences today prove to me that our actions are not only justified at this time, but they are our only option. To all the people who recognize us in town and show their support, y'all are awesome. You are the reason we are taking time out of our lives to commit to this campaign, and your kind words really resonate. But I want to make it clear that my arrest isn't that awe-inspiring. In fact, the fact that our friend is cut off from us is something that has been a major concern since the second I stepped off the encampment. He's the one who is putting it all on the line right now, and he needs our support. Please, if you have the means, to go to www.notennesseepipeline.blogspot.com and contact us in regards to a donation. We need bail money, medical supplies, vegan food, warm articles of clothing, camping gear, cooking gear, climbing rope, love and support, and above all, good vibes. We can win this. I know we will. Love and solidarity forever. Crabgrass, less than 3. That's what it says. Less than 3 inches. Crabgrass, less than 3 inches. All right. Once again, that webpage, www.notennesseepipeline.blogspot.com. And protest continues against Tasmanian old-growth logging in a proposed World Heritage Area. This story by Ecological Internet with Observer Tree and Still Wild, Still Threatened. Take action to protect Australia's priceless temperate rainforest. An important new report from Still Wild, Still Threatened finds the Australian government has made pledges to protect Tasmania's priceless temperate rainforest, yet shockingly industrial clear-cut logging of old-growth continues in what was to be a World Heritage Area. Important forest wilderness is covering some 170,000 hectares, that's about 400,000 acres, including Butler's Gorge and the Florentine Weld and Styx Valleys have been nominated to be added to the Tasmanian Wilderness World Heritage Area and could finally be given a protection after decades of protests. Alarmingly, however, industrial-scale clear felling, or clear cutting, is still continuing within these forests, with timbers being sold as eco-ply by the Malaysian timber mafia. From the top of the Observer Tree in the middle of this ancient forest, conservationist Miranda Gibson is calling for your help to protect these globally significant forests. Miranda's action is part of long-running grassroots campaigns to protect Tasmania's forests, with Ecological Action has successfully participated in for nearly 20 years, including leading international protests, which helped to get notorious guns logging to stop logging old-growth forests. We need your help again to call on the Australian government to honor their international obligations and protect these World Heritage-nominated old-growth temperate rainforests from industrial destruction. And for a direct action link, go to www.forests.org/shared/alerts. That's www.forests.org/shared/alerts. Or go to www.observertree.org. And what do we know about the Russian meteor in this interview by John Mattson of the Scientific American? A surprise meteor strike over central Russia recently lit up the skies, blew out windows on the ground, and injured roughly 1,000 people in and around Chelyabinsk, a city of 1.1 million people in southern Russia. The inbound object, thought to be a small asteroid, had not been discovered prior to impact, but already teams on the ground are reportedly collecting possible fragments of the meteorite, and researchers around the globe are scrambling to figure out what happened. Scientific American contacted Margaret Campbell Brown, a professor in the Meteor Physics Group at the University of Western Ontario, to get the latest information. Question, what do we know as of now about what caused the fireball over Russia this morning? Answer, we've actually seen it from at least two infrasound stations. Infrasound is very low-frequency sound waves, which are produced in, for example, loud explosions. There is a global network of infrasound sensors whose purpose is to detect nuclear explosions in the atmosphere. It's part of the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. Two of the nearest stations in this network, which were both in Russia, did detect this very large event. So from that, we know that the energy of the explosion was about 300 kilotons of TNT equivalent. So it was a very, very powerful explosion. It was the biggest explosion from a meteor that we've seen in the atmosphere since the Tunguska impacts of 1908. We know the meteor lasted about 30 seconds. It came into the atmosphere at a very shallow angle, which is why it lasted so long. The object was moving at about 18 kilometers per second, which is about 65,000 kilometers per hour, which is typical of asteroidal speed. From the energy of the impact, we think it is about 15 meters in size, so it would be the largest object to hit Earth since the Tunguska impact, as far as we know. We haven't recorded an object larger than that. Its mass was probably about 7,000 metric tons, so it was a very large object. Question, you may have seen the Russian Academy of Sciences issued a statement with a lower estimate for the size of the object, something in a few meter range producing an explosion of a few kilotons. Right, it's the most uncertain part of the calculation, but I would be very surprised if it's less than 100 kilotons. It was a very, very large event. And the fact that there was so much damage on the ground supports the conclusion that the energy was high. You need a lot of energy to shatter windows in the way that was seen. Question, is there any reason to suspect that it was anything other than an asteroid? Answer, an asteroid is certainly the most likely suspect. The size of it, the speed it was going, and so on, all point to an asteroid. The fact that it exploded in the atmosphere implies it was probably a stony asteroid, probably a chondritic type, for example, as opposed to something iron, because iron things are much stronger and tend to make it to the ground where they release their energy. Question, where was most of the energy released as this object made its way through the atmosphere? Answer, in this case, the final destination, which seems to have been the largest deposit of energy, was somewhere around 15 to 20 kilometers in altitude. The actual fireball probably started significantly higher than that at about 50 kilometers, but most of the energy was apparently deposited during that last explosion lower in the atmosphere. Question, how often should we expect to see an event like this? In the 15-meter size range, I think it happens about every 50 years. It's been more than 100 years since we've seen something of this size, however, but statistically it happens about every 50 years. When you consider all the areas of the Earth that are uninhabited, the oceans, the ice caps, the deserts, and so on, it's very surprising that this happened over such a populated area. The Russians were very unlucky. And here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field. America's last continuously wild buffalo population numbers fewer than 4,200 individuals. Living in and around Yellowstone National Park, they are under a tremendous amount of pressure that threatens their immediate survival and their long-term evolutionary potential. This season, over 127 wild buffalo have been gunned down by hunters along the border of Yellowstone National Park. While Montana's state hunt is finally over, some treaty hunting will continue through March. Additionally, the Montana legislature is quickly moving towards a frenzy of devastating bills that would have very real and harmful impacts to these gentle giants. Aggravating matters, Yellowstone National Park continues to hold fast to their plans to senselessly slaughter hundreds of buffalo this year and in years to come. While Yellowstone managers admit that these are the most unique and important buffalo populations in the world, they seek to manage for the smallest numbers possible. You and I have the power to stop this. Together, our actions have made significant differences for wild buffalo. But wild bison remain ecologically extinct, truly endangered, without federal listing or protection. We need to keep the pressure on and turn it up. Everyone who reads these words has the capacity to make a difference. Please go to the webpage to learn about the ways you can help Wild Buffalo right now, and please help raise awareness by sharing this news with all your friends and contacts. Important ways you can help the buffalo right now. Keep pressure on Montana decision makers. The pressure you've been applying to the Montana legislature is being felt. Already one of the bad buffalo bills, HB 312, has died in committee. This bill would have given the Montana Department of Livestock unprecedented powers over migratory elk and other wildlife. Well done. But there are still numerous bills being considered by the legislature, and these lawmakers and Montana Governor Steve Bullock need to keep hearing from you. Keep writing, keep calling, and keep emailing. Attend all hearings you can, and keep the pressure on. You are making a difference. You can contact the Yellowstone National Park and oppose their plans to slaughter wild buffalo. The Organic Act of 1916 established the National Park Service and requires the agency to conserve the scenery and natural and historic objects and the wildlife therein, and to provide for the enjoyment of the same in such manner and by such means as will leave them unimpaired for the enjoyment of future generations. Yellowstone National Park's maltreatment of America's last wild buffalo populations run contrary to the intent of this most important provision of law. Tell Yellowstone National Park to uphold their legal responsibility to the Organic Act and cease any and all plans to harass and slaughter wild bison. Buffalo Field Campaign has a wish list. They're looking for new field volunteers and video tripods. Buffalo Field Campaign is in need of field volunteers for the remainder of this winter buffalo protection season and for our summer education and outreach campaign. If you are interested, passionate, and hardworking, please contact our volunteer coordinator. Can't volunteer but want to help anyway? Donate money today and we will use your contribution where it is most needed. But we are also in need of quality fluid head, video, and photo tripods that we can use in the field to document the bison and their mismanagement. These are not cheapy tripods. These are professional quality. Contact Buffalo Field Campaign's gear coordinator with any questions about these needs and check out our complete wish list on the webpage for further needed items. And that webpage is www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. If you have a donation, please send it to Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957 West Yellowstone, Montana. The zip code is 59758. Once again, that address, Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957 West Yellowstone, Montana, zip 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call. Area code 406-646-0070. Once again, the webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And you can help and protect the wild and scenic Chetco River in Oregon. The wild and scenic Chetco River in Oregon is renowned for its world-class salmon and steelhead runs and its crystal clear water. However, it is still vulnerable to mining thanks to the General Mining Law. A law from 1872 gives mining precedent over all other uses of the river. The good news is the U.S. Forest Service is urging the Interior Department to protect about 17 miles of the river by withdrawing it from mining for the next 5 years to give Congress time to pass more lasting protection via the Chetco River Protection Act. Help support protection of the wild and scenic Chetco from mining. With its crystal clear water, big salmon, wild backcountry, and fabulous camp spots, the wild and scenic Chetco River is a great American outdoor treasure. It's also the beloved backyard river of local communities that benefit economically from its world-class salmon and steelhead fisheries and the pure drinking water it provides. The Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest recently released its environmental assessment for a 5-year mineral withdrawal in aid of legislation, the Chetco River Protection Act. The EA makes clear that suction dredge mining along the river threatens the outstanding remarkable values which the area was designated for, and it emphasizes that these values are important economic drivers for local communities and that these values can only be fully protected through mineral withdrawal. American Rivers has listed the Chetco River as one of America's most endangered rivers in 2010. It is time to ensure that this river no longer warrants this concerning distinction. Ask Interior Secretary Salazar to approve immediate withdrawal of the Chetco River from mining for the next 5 years in order to allow Congress time to pass permanent protections for the river. To take action, go to www.americanrivers.org. That's www.americanrivers.org. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. I want to urge you to tune in to the Earth First Update every Thursday evening. at Free Radio Santa Cruz 101 FM. You can also tune in on Friday afternoons for a rebroadcast at 3 o'clock. Or, if you're in Moscow, Idaho, tune to KRFP, Free Radio Moscow, Idaho, 92.5 FM, 9:30 on Monday nights. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening. You can find our show at radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, and search for Earth First Update. And tune in next Thursday evening for another Earth First Update.